show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. So why is it, Guy, that you plainly state in the opening of your show that you are the nation's number one Democratic talk show? That's because I am a Democrat, a proud liberal Democrat. I don't hide behind the word progressive. And why do we claim we're number one? Not because we have the most listeners, because we don't. But because we give you the unvarnished truth every day. We give you our expert opinion on what the political issues of the day are. And because we're always right. How about that? How's that for confidence? Absolutely, we're always right on our political opinion. So if you'd like to challenge us on that, of course, you can give us a call, 866-546-5254. Hope to have a good show for you today. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to have a gentleman by the name of Don Yeager. He's a New York Times best-selling author. Has a new book out about the Duke Lacrosse case called It's Not About the Truth, and he's got quite a story to tell us about that, about the players and Coach Pressler's. I happen to know somebody who had a son that played lacrosse for Duke, and that's how this whole thing came about. So we'll be talking about that coming up, around 3:25 or so. How you doing today? Hope it's a great day where you are. It certainly is a warm day here in Southwest Florida. Do want to remind everybody, BillyShearsMusic.com. BillyShearsMusic.com. Stop on over there and take a look at this Thursday night special that's coming up this evening. You won't want to miss that. And speaking about music, how many of you got to see last night the special from the Library of Congress? It actually came from the beautiful, beautiful Warner Theater in Washington, D.C., but it was sponsored by the Library of Congress, and they passed out their special George Gershwin Award. I guess they don't call it the George Gershwin Award. It's the Gershwin Award in honor of George and Ira Gershwin, famous composers here in this country, famous music men. And they gave their special Gershwin Award to Paul Simon last night. And I have to admit to being absolutely spellbound for the entire 2 hours it was on. I seldom sit by the TV for a couple hours in the evening, but the show was just unbelievably entertaining. They had a variety of artists who did Paul's music, people like Jesse Dixon and Lyle Lovett and James Taylor. Oh, Taylor was fabulous. To be frank, I've never seen a lot of Mark Anthony's music. He was terrific in this last night. Alison Krauss, Art Garfunkel, of course, and the Dixie Hummingbirds. What a show. And like I mentioned, it was taped at the gorgeous Warner Theater in downtown Washington, D.C. and it featured one great hit after another. Still Crazy, After All These Years, Graceland, Mrs. Robinson, who else? Bridge Over Troubled Waters, Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes. Oh, I love that. And, of course, they had the great African group on there. I mean, it was a musical feast. Don't know when I've enjoyed a program so very much. I was so glad to have seen that last night. And I'll tell you truthfully, if there's a replay on, I think I'd sit and watch it again. I enjoyed it that much. Paul Simon, in my humble opinion, probably other than Paul McCartney, he and McCartney, probably the only two musicians who have really and truly spanned almost half a decade, half a century, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and into the 2000s, both of them still making music, still making great music, and got a lot of respect for Paul Simon and Paul McCartney as well. I don't know that they'll ever give the Gershwin Award to McCartney, because after all, he's not American, so it could be that it's for Americans only. I'm not sure. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. Just to finish up on what we were talking about yesterday about this Ann Coulter thing, I do want everybody to keep in mind that reality tells us that there's nothing more attractive to a bigot than, well, let's say it like it is, than words of hatred. Nothing is more musical to the ears of a bigot than hate. And hatred and bigotry are sometimes, there's something Ann Coulter and her devout followers really have in common. She plays to their hatred, and they feed off of it. And I really think what we need to do is maybe ignore Ann Coulter and make her followers, make her devotees out to be the pariahs that they are. And when we successfully identify those who love her as the bigoted, racist, and hate mongers that they really are, when we expose them to everyone, then they will fade and fall by the wayside. And when she has no following, she will, for all practical purposes, cease to exist as any kind of a negative force at all. So I think that's the answer with Ann Coulter. Certainly that whole show with Chris Matthews got a tremendous amount of press, which is unfortunate. And, of course, Chris Matthews was basking in the glory of his rating success with that Ann Coulter appearance from Tuesday. And he sits there and he listens to others, including Walter Williams last evening, say that Coulter's a media whore who has no real ideology but is only promoting herself and doing it by saying anything she can get away with. And Matthews is sitting there agreeing with these people and not understanding that he is just as big a media whore as is Coulter for having her on his show in the first place. And let's face it, they were just using each other, and he sits there all indignant about her statements. Just what did he expect from her is what I'd like to know. He acted like he was offended. What did he think he would get from Ann Coulter when he had her on the show? And from a viewer standpoint, I guess, what were we sitting there thinking we would hear other than what she gave us? So, nothing surprising there. Ann Coulter probably sold a ton of books from it. Maybe John Edwards' campaign raised some money off of it. They tried to make, Walter Williams especially tried to make the Edwards campaign out to be just as bad as Ann Coulter, which I vehemently disagree with. I don't blame Edwards for trying to take advantage of the situation and use the hate mongering and the vitriol that the woman was throwing at him to try and raise some cash. What else would you do with that? You can't ignore it. You do have to fight back. I agree with John Edwards on that. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll join us here on the program today. You know, if you, much has been made here in the past few days about this, all this mess with Cheney claiming he's not part of the executive branch, and hell, even Bush almost claiming he's not part of the executive branch. if you carefully and closely watch this Bush administration operate, as I've done for the past 6+ years, you finally reach a point where you're beyond outrage. And I think most of us are suffering from an outrage overload these days. That's why it's hard to get all very excited about some of these things that come up. It's always, it's one thing after another, and we keep thinking, well, this is it, this is it, this is it, this will put an end to this administration. Now, finally, the Democrats will do something, and they never do. They huff and they puff and they threaten to blow the house down, but nothing really happens. Henry Waxman's having his hearing. We got Schumer up there, helping conduct hearings. Patrick Leahy. But nothing really serious has come of it, and let's be honest here for a moment. Can we talk? Nothing serious is going to come of it. I think you know that by now. I know that by now. Look at everything that's happened to Alberto Gonzalez, all that we've heard about the stench coming from the Justice Department. Has anything of note happened to Alberto Gonzalez? Certainly not. And it probably will not. And, of course, all the information that we found out about Dick Cheney these past few weeks, and actually over the past 6 years, we knew about Dick Cheney. We knew what kind of an awful man that he is, truly an awful man. And like I mentioned probably yesterday, I think it was, probably the most hated, despised man to ever serve in Washington, D.C. I can't think of anybody back throughout our history that was, and I do use the word hated, reviled, as much as Dick Cheney, and deservingly so. The man is totally barren of morals and ethics, doesn't know what a normal feelings of a human being actually are, I don't think. He's some sort of an automatron who is devoid of feelings, acts in his own interest and in the interest of his rich friends. That's all he knows how to do. But he is a hated figure. His poll numbers have always been way down. I don't think there's any doubt. Even before this Washington Post article came out, this four-part piece by the Washington Post, I don't think there's been any doubt whatsoever that he's been running this administration all along, that he's been the driving force in it, and he's been the man who's been making the decisions. He chose himself as the vice president, and he's been calling the shots ever since. And this latest farce by the office of the vice president, claiming he's not part of the executive branch of government, is just but one more example of an administration which has no regard whatsoever for the Constitution of the United States, nor for the citizens of our country either. They just don't. That's not something they think about. That's not something they care about. And I think we need to accept that. You know, Cheney's claim that he's some sort of separate and superior branch of government, not bound by the normal rules and laws, is so utterly ridiculous that I'm left shaking my head and wondering why the hell the Democrats don't immediately start impeachment proceedings against the man and get him as far away from the seat of power as possible. Some of these latest antics by the Bush administration are so beyond the pale that you really do have to wonder if this is some sort of a bad dream we're living in. I know it's come to that with me many times. I wake up and think, oh, it has to be a dream. You know, recently Bush vetoed the stem cell research bill, saying that he was protecting science. Protecting science? Protecting science? This coming from an administration that seems to have nothing but scorn and ridicule for science as we know it. You know, I think that I've reached the point of outrage fatigue I was speaking of. And it seems that every action of this administration gets more and more outlandish and crazy. You'll have to admit that. It's Alice in Wonderland, and the Mad Hatter's absolutely having a field day. And what's worse is that the media, both the print and the electronic, are having discussions about these matters as if they might be worthy of some sort of intelligent discourse, if only we'd sit and listen to their warped reasoning. But if you stop and think about it, reason is not a word that fits into any discussion about the Bush administration. Reason Well, I think so anyway. Reason is for sane and responsible people, and neither of those words come close to describing the action of the Bushies. But then how responsible is this Congress of the United States right now? Really, how responsible are they? We're mostly liberals here. We're mostly Democrats here. Well, at least that's what my email tells me and your comments tell me. How responsible is this Congress we have right now? You know, blah-de-blah, blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. That's all we hear from them. They pontificate, they bloviate, they huff and they puff, and nothing happens. And they don't do a damn thing to stop these people from furthering their, well, what have to be, could only be described as grotesque policies. And they're making a mockery of the United States Constitution. You know, they're trying to have rational discussions about something that's totally irrational. And I want there to be no doubt on this program that I hold the Democrats every bit as responsible as this Bush administration for the devastating policies enacted during the past few months. They're guilty of sloth. They're guilty of inaction. They're all talk. They're all BS. They're no all hat and no cattle and every other kind of saying that you can come up with like that. It all started in November 2000 when an entire nation stood by and watched as an election was stolen. And I do mean stolen. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. Just as sure as Bonnie and Clyde robbed banks, and just as brazenly, the Bushes stole the election, and they thumbed their noses at the people of the United States of America. And then they started on a program, and we've mentioned it so many times, their program of raping and pillaging the United States Treasury, such as never been seen before in the history of this country. And the media's response? Get over it. Get over it, they said. And the shame of it all is that most of America did get over it. The majority of Americans shrugged their shoulders and said, what the hell? We can't do anything about it, so let's shut up and move on. What can we do anyway? We've allowed this gang of brazen liars and thieves to run over the country and our laws as though they had some sort of a mandate, when exactly the opposite is true. Let's face it, back in 2000, they acted as if they won the election by a landslide, and they set off on a path of economic and political destruction such as this nation has never, never seen before. They've become drunk with power, and they've wielded that power in absolutely unabated fashion with their tax cuts, their war, their horrible selection to the Supreme Court, and that's going to be end up being the most devastating legacy of this presidency. There's less selections to the Supreme Court. Already we can see it tilting now. And yet the people and the media went right along with them. What can we do about it, everybody said. What can we do about it? And they threw him back in there for a second term. I never thought I would see a time where Richard Nixon's corruption seemed like child's play, but I'm seeing it now. Nixon was a saint compared to these guys. I never thought I'd see the day when Spiro Agnew would be considered to be kind of a political neophyte, a beginner compared to the vice president we have now. We have a vice president in one Dick Cheney who, like I mentioned, seems to be totally devoid of human feelings. He's a man that's so corrupt and so evil, so as to be on level with almost any tyrant you can name in American history. And yet Congress sits by and plays the game, and still there's no call for impeachment, none at all. No call. Still no tough action against this runaway train of an administration. Nothing but political cowardice from the Congress. The media is far more interested in Paris Hilton getting out of jail than they were about the latest revelation concerning Dick Cheney's almost total control of our government. He does an end round run around almost every other branch of government, and the media sits by and says, well, let's talk about it. We've got more evidence than ever before that Cheney is in fact pulling the strings on the puppet that is George Bush. Cheney has imposed his will on this administration to do his personal bidding, and the nation sits by and does nothing. And I'm so disgusted by it. How much more clear does it have to be that Dick Cheney has circumvented the United States Constitution? How much clearer, you know, how much clearer does it have to be that it is, in fact, Dick Cheney who's making the laws of this land? He clearly wants another war, a war with Iran. He wants to allow the Middle East to literally explode, and the Congress of the United States sits by and literally sits on their hands and does nothing. You know, when Cheney claimed an extra constitutional role, Bush piped up and said, me too, I'm exempt from my own executive order, and still we do nothing. I'm getting that feeling, and you can probably tell it in my voice and from my actions on this program, and I hope I can change it. But I think people are just getting numb about this. And I think they can't believe that these people are serious. Well, yes, they are. They are serious. They are destroying this country from the inside out. And the press, and the Congress, and even the people are mostly silent. We're getting what we deserve. We really are. When we have, what, approximately half the people don't vote? We've got two-thirds of the people that once they do vote, don't give a damn what happens. Don't hold people's feet to the fire. Lots of people go vote and say, well, that's it. I've done my duty. Well, I guess I can talk about it, but it's not changing things, is it? Not right now, anyway. We're going to stop for a word or two, and we'll be back in a moment.
America's most dangerous investigative reporter, Greg Palast, joins Bob Kincaid for a bit of conversation radio.
But I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? We're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please, because there are people hungry for information and who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like this. It's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, Bob.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much.
Head-on with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Got a police dog craving for a fire.
I look at you all, see the love that's sleeping. While my guitar gently weeps, I look at the floor and I see it needs sweeping. Still my guitar gently weeps. I don't know why nobody told how to unfold your love. I don't know how someone controlled you. They bought and sold you. I look at the world and I notice it's turning. While my guitar gently weeps. years with every mistake we must surely be learning. Still my guitar gently weeps. I don't know how you were diverted. You were perverted too. I don't know how you were inverted. No one alerted you. I looked from the wings at the play you are staging, while my guitar gently weeps. As I'm sitting here doing nothing but aging, still my guitar gently weeps.
I'm sorry I'm late calling. I tried the other number and it said not working. I'm going to put you on hold for just a moment. I'll be right back. Hey, we're back. I guess you know that. Left the mic open there for a moment or two. Welcome back to the show. And as promised, everybody, right now, we've got Don Yeager on the line. He's a New York Times bestseller and author whose book about the Duke lacrosse case, and I guess there's not another living soul on the planet that doesn't know about that. Got him on to tell us about our new book and all about that case. Don, welcome to the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, thank you so much. It's nothing like live radio, huh?
Ah, yeah. I just explaining to somebody here that tried one number and it didn't work, and of course you panic. Everybody's on a close time schedule in radio, and things happen. Live radio, nothing like it.
I understand.
Don, you've been a prolific writer over the years, and I don't know that you've come across a subject that's probably, oh, what's a good word for it? As outrageous, I suppose, as a story about the Duke lacrosse case. How did you get involved in it?
Well, guys, as you pointed out, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to write for Sports Illustrated as for the last 10 years as one of their kind of lead investigative guy. I've had the chance to write. This is my 13th book, and so over the course of time, different publishers have kept in touch with me as subjects that intrigued them came up, and this subject clearly intrigued a number of publishers, but Simon & Schuster was the one that had the greatest interest, and they asked me if I would be willing to take this on as a book back in the late fall. And anyway, in all of that, I started working on it and got the chance in January to interview the coach who had suffered probably the greatest, at that time anyway, the greatest loss, and that he had lost his job and everything else. And as I met with him, he told me two things. One, that he had kept a diary, which as an interviewer, you understand the value of that. That's awesome. But the second thing was that he had every intention of writing his own book at some stage, and that our conversation was barely over before I was trying to figure out a way to meld our two projects together. And I think it turned out to be quite a win.
Well, evidently, and Coach Pressler's got quite a story to tell. I don't think anybody probably suffered any more than he did over this whole thing. I mean, he was at Duke for, oh God, at least a dozen years, wasn't he?
He was there 16 years.
16
National
years.
Coach of the Year, National Coach of the Year 2 years ago, and then had 100% graduation rate in 16 years. every player who played for him, and there are 46 players on a lacrosse team every year. And every player who played for him, whether they starred or they barely made it off the bench, graduated over that time period.
And I think anybody that's familiar with college athletics knows that that in and of itself is absolutely just
extraordinary.
Yeah,
very, very amazing. And so, you know, between all of that, you mix all that and this, you know, and then the amazing story of what was going on with this prosecutor. It just made it's unbelievable. It was unbelievable reporting, and it's been fascinating reading to a number of the places that have had a chance to look at it.
Well, let me ask you, how long were you involved in this story, or was it even before you got seriously involved in it that you kind of smelled a rat about this whole thing and knew that something was afoul?
I'd love to sound prescient and say that I had some sense of this, months earlier. But I will tell you, I was one of the very early. I was right there with most of America, believing the very worst about these kids as I was reading the stories and hearing what was being said about them, and was embarrassed that I was. I rushed to judgment, just like so many of the rest of the media and other people. And so, I think that's part of what made me so passionate about doing this book, is I realized how wrong I'd been, and how the bottom line is that says a lot about where all of us should be when this stuff comes up.
Yeah, and you're right about the stereotype. A bunch of drunken, no good college guys up to no good, just like they all are. You know, that's what that's why so many people think it.
And you had a prosecutor who was saying all that outrageous stuff, and you're going, my God, well, they can't be. They got to be, wrong if they're so caught up like that. So.
And Nifong was so much different than the normal prosecutor. So many prosecutors hold back and say, well, we're not going to talk about that. We'll bring the case out in court. He really did decide from day one that he was going to try this try this case in the public arena, didn't he?
Yeah, and he needed to. I mean, that was the thing that was probably the dynamic that most of the media knew and probably didn't share with the public during those early days. Here was a guy that this case landed in his lap 30 days before his first ever election. Remember, he had been appointed as a prosecutor to fulfill the term of his predecessor. So he's running for office, and he's down 17 points in the polls 30 days before the election to a woman that he had fired. So he knew that if he lost this election, she would fire him. And so he needed this in order to win specifically the African American vote in Durham, which was what turned that race around for him.
Well, and that was probably the ugliest part of all this is the terrible race relations that got started as a result of his actions.
No question, he played this down to the very to the worst possible. He took advantage of every card that could be played out of the race deck, and in doing so, I think he really embarrassed a lot of black leaders in that community, which is really kind of sad.
Well, not black leaders from all over the country, though. I believe Al Sharpton got involved in it, did he not?
Al Sharpton was one of the very first to march in Duke and march on the House and to argue that this case needed to be prosecuted in a post haste, and of course you can't get Al Sharpton to comment on it today.
That was my next question. Have you heard Al Sharpton, kind of like the Tawana Brawley case? Have you heard Al Sharpton come back and comment on this at all? I have not.
Not at all. Now, because he was too busy criticizing Don Imus.
Imus walked into one there, that's for sure.
Yeah, he did.
This dancer that was involved, this Crystal Gayle Magnum, what's been her story since this all ended? Has she been ostracized? Has she left the community? Where is she now?
She actually is still in the community. She's actually got some. She has a history of mental illness that has been well documented at this stage.
And Nifong never bothered to bring that up.
In fact, he knew it. We know now from the testimony that came up during his disbarment that he knew that she had this history of mental instability. She'd been been hospitalized a couple of times on these issues, had been diagnosed in certain ways that made her, made her credibility probably somewhat questionable. But regardless, Nifong knew that. All that said, she is now kind of dealing with those issues, and I don't think there's no hint out there that anyone's going to try to prosecute her.
Well, how does the community, as somebody once said, how do I get my reputation back? How do these players, these young men, are they scarred forever, or do you think the truth coming out is going to set them free from this?
You know, it's interesting. I've heard both. Senses of that. I don't know. I think time will only tell. I mean, there's some who say clearly, as one of the boys said, the day that they were all declared innocent by the attorney general, it won't matter. 60 years from now, when I die, it will not matter what I accomplish between now and then. My obituary, the first line of my obituary will be, Dave Evans, one of the three accused lacrosse players. died today, so that's a sad commentary if that's true. But there are others who think that in fact the high profile nature of what they were accused of and what they've been declared innocent of will allow them to not suffer as badly as maybe other people who are wrongly accused.
What about the school? Duke, do you think Duke has done enough to apologize to these guys, to make things right with them? I mean, of course,
not even close.
In my opinion, they jumped the gun as well and really took off on these guys.
Despicable is the only way to describe the way Duke handled it. I mean, they decided very early on. I mean, faculty, some of the very faculty members who were charged with teaching these young men were out there protesting in their front yard, holding out signs. One of the signs at one of these protests that included a number of faculty members encouraged the castration of these lacrosse players. How can you take yourself seriously as a faculty member after having jumped a gun like that? It's embarrassing.
And the academic community, you would think if anybody was going to appreciate the innocent until proven guilty, it would be the academic
process,
community.
Right? Yeah,
yes.
You would think all that would be important, but it's not, unfortunately.
Are any of the guys back in school at Duke?
No. All three of the accused players have moved on. Dave Evans has graduated, has got a job on Wall Street. Reed Seligman has left Duke and will continue his education at Brown this upcoming year. And Colin Finnerty is in the process of picking his school right now.
And the coach?
The coach, actually, sadly, here he was, Division I Coach of the Year, is now coaching a very small Division II school in Smithfield, Rhode Island. But the truth is, I would say I think he's quite happy with the fact that he is he's able to even be coaching at all. So,
what about legal action in any of this? Anybody contemplating that? You would think if there was ever a case against the prosecutor's office, you would think.
It would not surprise me if you'll see all that happening in the next couple months. I mean, I think that there's just the level of despicable behavior that had to be put together in order for this case to occur the way it did is just so strong that you really have to, I'm sure it'll all come up here soon.
Well, I think a lot of people were surprised that hadn't paid close attention to the case as it transpired a little later on after all the big news was over. Kind of surprised at how quick Nifong was out of this when his trial started and all, why it was over and done with pretty doggone quick. I thought they'd have a hard time convicting him or disbarring him and all, but evidently justice
prevailed. It was quite an open and shut case. By the time you got done listening to the witnesses, it was pretty evident that this guy knew. I mean, he knew very early on. In fact, probably the most damning testimony given against him was by the police lieutenant who was kind of shepherding the investigation, who said that on March 27th, which is only 2 weeks after the alleged event occurred, but again, remember now we're still aiming at an election, which is not far away, March 27th, the DNA results had come back, and the lieutenant had set up a meeting with Nai Fong. He sat down with the district attorney, and he said, "We have nothing. We have a victim whose statement has changed multiple times. We have DNA that has come back to show that there is no evidence, no physical evidence of a crime. We have no witness statement that helps us other than the victim's statement. And we have nothing." And he passionately describes this on the stand, and he says that Nai Fong looked at him and with an expletive says, "We're screwed." And the guy says, "Yeah, you're right, we are." Nai Fong then proceeded to walk out of his office, walk down the stairs of the courthouse, and hold a press conference saying, you know, we need these hooligans to step forward and admit what they did. You know, amazing. I mean, he had, the evidence was in hand to show that nothing occurred, and he walked right out and referred to the boys as hooligans.
And if I'm not mistaken, at that time, he did have, as you mentioned, the DNA evidence that had found multiple DNA evidence in the accuser's body, but none of it, he
none
knew
any,
at that time.
None of any one of the boys.
None of those
right.
players. And yet it was yep. it was multiple from other people.
Yes.
You would think he should have known at that moment. Well, he did know what he was dealing with. What have you any idea as to how this Nai Fong thought he could push through with this and get away with this? Or at that point, did he, I mean, he did obviously try and press on with it.
I think that he had a, I think his great sense was that this was going to, if he got through the election, that at the very least what he could end up doing is presenting a case saying, you know, I mean, in this country we have to believe the accuser and we have to give her her due and here is her statement and here. I don't think he was counting on the defense lawyers being A, as good or as vigilant as they were. So I think he thought that he would at least be able to present a case that would have left it to a jury, and then if he lost the case, he could just argue that he lost the case. I don't think he had any idea that he'd end up losing his own career, which is pretty interesting.
Well, being disbarred, and is there a time period on that? Can he reapply?
No, he is disbarred for life.
In just that state, or can he go elsewhere?
Well, it's a North Carolina bar decision, but I would find it hard to believe that any other state would accept him.
I would hope. We had two members of that team. I think Finnerty and Siegelman were both 19 or 20 years old. They were indicted right. on first degree forcible rape. That is you're talking about a hell of a penalty in that state if they're
30
convicted.
Years.
30 years.
30 years. Yeah.
And the same way with evidence with Evans, he was indicted on first degree forcible rape and kidnapping.
Right.
That probably even had, with the kidnapping added on, probably even had a worse penalty on with it. And yet, this man was willing to trade getting into office for sacrificing these young men's lives. I don't think I ever heard of anything quite so disgusting.
I haven't either. I tell you, it's been quite an education.
I'm sure it has. So, do you think Coach Pressler is going to stay where he is, or will he make a move back to come back to Division One again, or is he going to press on with writing his own book? Or
no, this is the book. This is the only book he's going to do. I think he's committed to. And I will tell you, I believe he's committed to Smithfield, to Bryant University. Just because he is such a he's such a loyal guy. I mean, he stood by these players when throwing them under the bus would have been the easiest thing to do. I think loyalty is a huge issue to him.
Well, it certainly was the easiest thing to do for the faculty and administration of Duke University is to throw them all under the bus immediately, cancel their season, made a mockery of the Duke lacrosse team, which had a distinguished reputation for how long? Don, was this anything other than your ordinary frat party that takes place? And we all know, I don't know if you've been there, but I have, that takes place on every big campus in the United States. Was there anything different about this?
Well, no, I do think that's largely what was discovered. Duke actually commissioned several studies about this, and one of the things that came up was that these kind of parties involving strippers occur on quite a regular basis at Duke University. In fact, 21 other parties involving strippers and fraternity sororities included in this. Fraternity sororities and athletic teams had occurred at Duke in the previous year.
21 other.
So I think that you're right. I mean, this was something that occurred a lot more regularly than anybody realized.
Not defending it, not saying it's right.
Not
but
at all.
College people
in fact,
being.
I think that's interesting because the boys had been the first ones to step up and say, "Boy, we really screwed up. This was really wrong. We shouldn't have done this."
Well, Duke, the thing is, I don't know how many people listening have any idea of the stringent requirements to get into Duke and how their sports programs over the years have been so clean. They're never accused of anything. You know, if you go to Duke, the word student-athlete actually means something, where it doesn't on a lot of campuses. It's just amazing that this is the campus it happened on. I can think of a lot of campuses across the United States that this might have happened on, but it just was shocking to me that it was Duke. And I didn't go to Duke. I don't know anybody who has. But my word, it was an explosive story. Is the book released yet?
Book has been out for just short of 2 weeks, and it just was announced last night that it has made the New York Times bestseller list for the second week in a row. So it opened hot and it stays hot, and that's a great thing.
Oh, congratulations! That is a great thing, Don. I want to thank you so much for coming on the program and telling us about this fascinating story.
Thanks for having me.
It's a great thing to see this come to a proper conclusion, and one can only hope that these young men. Won't get permanently scarred out of this in a terrible way, that their tombstones do say something else when they pass on. And I want to thank you for helping expose the whole thing and set it straight.
Well, thank you so much for allowing us.
Thanks a lot. Don Yeager, the new book, it's not about the truth. And you do want to read it. It is a fascinating story. Like I said, it's the untold story of the Duke lacrosse case. Don and I have a mutual friend that has a son that had played lacrosse at Duke University. He wasn't one of the three charged with this, but that's how this whole thing came about. So most unusual for those of you that aren't sports nuts, but it is most unusual to have anything like this happen at Duke University. Like I said, I can think of a lot of student-athlete factories around the country where it may have happened, but the idea that it happened to Duke, at Duke, first of all, to me was most amazing. And it was very disconcerting to me to see Al Sharpton jump in there, that race relations in that community were stirred up to a boiling point. And turned out that these guys were utterly and completely innocent of all these charges, and I'm glad to see it set straight. Very, very glad to see it set straight. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hi, yes, Guy James back with you here. Welcome back to the program. Of course, we'd love to hear from you, 866-546-5254. And if you've got minutes to spare on your Vonage plan or one of those, call us at 941-876-6896. That's right. So a couple of interesting stories on the wire today. And I like funny stories as much as the next guy. And I thought some of these were exactly really funny. False teeth are being blamed for a traffic accident this week on the German Autobahn. Published reports say a 57-year-old truck driver was cruising along the highway when he decided to eat an apple. Police say the driver choked on a piece of the apple, and as he coughed, he ended up swallowing his false teeth. Yes, that's what it says. He lost control of his truck, and he struggled for air and crashed into another car. Luckily, nobody was hurt in the accident. I guess you could only draw a conclusion from this, that eating healthy causes accidents. That would never happen if he was, like, eating a Twinkie or something. And really, I doubt if he was in pain after the accident, but he will be in a couple of days when he... Well, it did say he swallowed those false teeth, and if he swallowed them, he's going to have to pass them, too. So he's going to be regretting this whole deal in a couple of days. What would you tell the OnStar people if that happened to you? What would you tell them? I just wonder. You know, I actually saw something like that happen one time. I was sitting in this bakery at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, you know, when the bar crowd comes in. It was an all-night bakery deli. And I was sitting there, and this woman comes in and sits down, obviously drunk. And, I don't know, ordered some coffee or something. And all of a sudden, she started coughing and coughing and coughing. Next thing you knew, her false teeth flew out of her mouth and flew across the floor and underneath the Pepsi machine in this place. I swear to you, I saw this happen. And the woman simply got up and walked out of the establishment. Didn't try to get her teeth or anything. And, the proprietors of the place retrieved the false teeth and thought she'd come back and claim them, but she never did. So there you have my famous false teeth story, and it's true, I swear, every word. 866-546-52. Yeah, really? Somebody looking at me here and saying, no, that's not really true. It is true. It is true. The teeth, like, whew, flew right out of her mouth, slid across the floor, right underneath the Pepsi machine. And I thought, well, you know, the woman's going to go over there and retrieve those teeth. I know. You're saying, Guy, where do you get these stories? Well, wouldn't tell you if it wasn't true. So, anyway, we have the guy on the Autobahn with his false teeth gone, and now he's anxiously waiting to get them back, I'm sure. And then up in Wisconsin, a robber's desire to quench his thirst after a holdup. Imagine this. He goes in and does a holdup, and he's thirsty, and his thirst ends up costing his freedom this past weekend because police in the town of Keel say a 46-year-old man robbed a Dollar General store of $200. $200 in cash Saturday afternoon, and then drove his car to a tavern less than a mile down the road. And, of course, the store clerk had given the police a description of the vehicle, and they arrested this guy less than 15 minutes while he was sitting at the bar. He had his freedom for 15 minutes. Kind of like he just sat down for his first beer, and the cops, they ruined the whole thing, announced it was last call for this guy. He should have robbed a convenience store and grabbed his cash and his beer at the same time. That's why they call him convenience store. Could have been a whole lot better for him. I guess if I had some drums here, I'd go ba-dum-dum right now, right? And many Americans like having guinea pigs as pets, but people in Peru enjoy the cute little critters fried Yes, fried on a bed of lettuce with a side of potatoes and a large helping of corn. On Sunday, people in Peru's Andes Mountains celebrated the second annual Festival of the Coy, as guinea pigs are known in the region. Guinea pig chefs say that the furry little creatures have zero cholesterol and are packed with protein, and festival goers down plates of fried, grilled, and baked guinea pigs at the festival, which included a competition for the largest critter. The winning guinea pig tipped the scales, oh my God, at almost 8 pounds. An 8 pound guinea pig? Man. Well, I'm wondering what the first restaurant down there that ever served a guinea pig to its customers. They said, we're looking for a guinea pig to eat a guinea pig. I don't know. Maybe something like that. Well, you are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Kind of a slow day so far. We hope it'll pick up after the news is over at the top of the hour. And we hope you'll get your little fingers ready to dial us here at 866-546-5254. We enjoy hearing from you. You don't want to just hear from me during this program. We want to hear from you as well. And once again, the local number, if you've got minutes to spare, 941-876-6896. So don't go away. We're going to pause for news right now. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is the Quality News Network. The controversial immigration bill, with detractors on both sides of the political aisle and strongly opposed by a majority of Americans, has been defeated. The measure, once thought dead, was revived by the president last week, failed today by a vote of 46-53, and will likely not be addressed again until 2009, when a new president and Congress take office. The Supreme Court today has ruled against using race to decide which schools public education students are assigned. According to judicial analysts, the 5-4 decision will likely be viewed as a landmark case and could have an impact other school districts around the country. President Bush has evoked executive privilege and denied a congressional subpoena for documents in connection to the firings of 8 federal prosecutors. White House counsel said the president has already supplied over 8,500 pages of documents, the testimony of key administration members, and must evoke presidential privilege in order to perform the duties of office. Britain's new Prime Minister Gordon Brown has appointed his senior ministerial members. Appointees included David Miliband as Foreign Secretary and Jackie Smith as Home Secretary. Tony Blair steps down after 10 years of service and will begin his new job as Middle East Envoy. In Baghdad, the bodies of 20 beheaded men were found on the banks of the Tigris River. The victims were between the ages of 20 and 40 years old and found with their arms and legs bound, with some heads next to the bodies. A car bomb at a transport hub in southwest Baghdad killed 20 and wounded more than 50. The attack burned 40 minibuses and killed riders waiting to board buses for work. The Libyan man jailed for the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, has been granted an appeal. Abdel Basset Ali Mohamed Al-Makrahi was convicted of the plane bombing, which killed 270 people, and given an appeal due to the new evidence and a question of the reasonableness of the court's verdict. Members of the House voted to increase their annual pay by $4,400 for a total of $170,000 a year. The annual pay raise was actually due back in January, but was held back until Congress voted to increase the minimum wage. 11 people have died as torrential rain continues to batter central Texas. The National Weather Service says there's more rain in the forecast, and this June has been the wettest in history since record-keeping began in 1899. And firefighters are still battling a stubborn wildfire in South Lake Tahoe. More than 3,000 acres and 200 homes have been burned. Fire officials say it appears human activity has started the blaze. You're listening to QNN.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press: How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
Pregnant mothers who take antidepressants are getting some reassurance from 2 new research studies. Both indicate that there is no strong connection between antidepressants and birth defects. Nearly 30,000 newborns were studied by researchers from Boston University and the Centers for Disease Control. The American bald eagle has been removed from the endangered species list after 40 years of protection. Scientists say nearly 10,000 mating pairs of the U.S. national system exists, with at least one pair in each of the 48 contiguous states. The U.S. labor market is in better shape than anticipated. According to the Labor Department, jobless claims dropped an adjusted 13,000 claims last week, a number lower than predicted by analysts. General Motors has agreed to sell its Allison Transmission Unit to private equity firms Carlyle Group and Onyx Corporation. The deal, worth $5.6 billion, is expected to send the automaker's shares to the highest level in over 2 years. Employees for South Korea's biggest automaker, Hyundai, went on a partial strike today as part of an industry-wide walkout protesting a free trade agreement with the United States. The pact will be signed on June 30th, but then must be ratified by legislatures from both countries. Adelphia Communications founder John Regas and his son will go to prison in mid-August. They were convicted 3 years ago in one of the worst cases of bank fraud in U.S. history. Light sweet crude is trading at $69.85 a barrel, and the Dow is up 29 points, and the NASDAQ is up 12. There is more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Jay Galley.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of the Guy James Show here on a Thursday. Yes, a Thursday afternoon. Got a big July the 4th coming up next week. What are you going to do for July 4th? What is everybody going to do for July the 4th next week? I mean, I know we'll all celebrate on July the 4th, but it's on a Wednesday, if my calendar looks right here, on a Wednesday. Man, we hate that, don't we? Everybody's used to having those 3-day weekends on the holidays, maybe even a 4-day weekend. How are you going to pull that off when it's on a Wednesday? That isn't going to work. Of course, Guy James doesn't get those kind of weekends, ever. But I am concerned for all my friends that aren't going to get their 3-day weekend. I wonder how do you celebrate the 4th of July? Around here, we go to the beach. Yeah, we go to the beach, set off fireworks. Of course, Florida is an unusual place. They sell fireworks 12 years around, 12 months a year. They've got fireworks stores, great big one, not far from where I live, big, huge fireworks store, and people shoot off fireworks for no apparent reason at any old time. Just the other night, about 9, 10 o'clock, bang, zoom, a lot of people setting off fireworks in the neighborhood. Don't know what was happening. They just felt like it, I guess. But where I used to live, you weren't even allowed to sell fireworks in the state. Now everybody can buy them in Florida. Well, who cares, right? 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone and see who's waiting for us. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, hi, Guy.
Hello.
Bruce here.
Hi, Bruce. How are you today?
All right. How you doing?
Well, not bad. Been an interesting day here on the show. We're having one of those kind of slow and taking it easy days. Just kind of taking it as it comes. How's thing going with you and the blog spot this week, Bruce?
Well, I don't know how much this shows up on your radar screen or your callers, but really, we're at a very, very interesting time in the talk radio wars that continue, where the report that was released last week, which I imagine you're familiar by the Center for American Progress.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah. Which pointed out the well-known fact that conservatives dominate talk radio, but unlike other reports before, it actually proceeded to make some recommendations that the talk radio environment needs to be changed so that more fairness will be accommodated. And ironically, the report itself, which is 40 pages long, and if you have the time to read it, it's worthwhile, specifically does not recommend reinstitution of the so-called fairness doctrine, which, those of you who listen to the show might not know about it, but it was sort of like the seminal difference in the way talk radio was, carried out for about 40 years, 1949 to 1987, when it was removed. And we've seen what has happened since 1987, with the right-wing takeover of talk radio. But this report actually doesn't call for the reinstitution of the Fairness Doctrine. It calls for some other changes that were made in 1996 with the Deregulation Act at that time. And it set off a firestorm of comments and other events, which I think are going to be very interesting once they play out.
The firestorm, as you mentioned, that's pretty much coming from the right-wing radio host, isn't it?
Well, it's coming from the right-wing radio hosts who have all commented. And, of course, it's interesting. I don't think any of them have read this report because they all say that that it calls for the reinstitution of the Fairness Doctrine, and it actually refers to the Fairness Doctrine as being irrelevant.
Right.
So it's funny that they should say that. Now, that being said, I don't know if it's because of this report or because of the immigration bill, but the immigration bill, as you know, is causing a lot of concern in Washington. The politicians and not just the Democrats, the Republicans as well, Trent Lott, Pete Voinovich from your state, Ohio, they're really annoyed with all the attack dogs on talk radio who are encouraging their callers to call in and fax and email, and they're getting flooded with what they perceive as an unfair, uninformed group of callers. And you had Trent Lott saying that talk radio is running America. You know, he's a Republican, as you know. We have to deal with this problem. You have Voinovich saying, I'm all for the Fairness Doctrine, whatever that is.
Yeah.
So it's not just the liberals who are disgusted with talk radio. It's also some of the Republicans.
Well, they better remember, as we used to say down home, they better remember what side of their bread is buttered, because many of them owe their offices to right-wing talk radio, and they know it.
Yeah, but I think they also know that, and not defending Trent Lott, I have a hard time doing that, but never frustrated. And, you know, it's interesting that this does go both ways, that, you know, that obviously on immigration, talk radio has taken the extreme right position. Nothing that even reforms the bill to allow anybody to be allowed into this country or given citizenship. That's flat out their position. And, you know, the middle and the certainly even the so-called moderate Republicans, if there are any left, are trying to structure some kind of compromise. But now, that being said, all of a sudden the comments are being made not only by Republicans but by Democrats as well, like Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin, who are leaders, as you know, in the Congress and Senate, who are now calling for the Luca fairness doctrine. It's not just Kucinich and some backbench Congress people who are asking for this. So the cat is out of the bag.
The thing is, that would be so. Speaking of cats, that would be like trying to herd some cats. The fairness doctrine, bringing it back in its former form, would be so unwieldy, so almost impossible to institute in a fair basis and have it work and have it policed properly. I don't see how they could do it. I really don't.
I don't think they will. If you ask me about what's going to happen, I do think that there will be, now that this has become a mainstream discussion, it probably will be something more like what the Center for American Progress report recommended, which is, some reorganization of the FCC to shorten license renewal arrangements, ownership caps, things like that, which would really hurt the Clear Channels and other radio station owners who have been acting in bad faith on this issue. And I think that, like the old expression, jawboning.
Yeah.
I think they'll get the message, and they'll try to fix this problem, which is a problem. It's ridiculous that talk radio is controlled by conservatives. You've been battling against it forever.
Yeah, and it's like 91-92% somewhere.
And they could talk to their blue in the face about how it's the market. It's the market. It's not the market. It's the way that they've decided to do this programming, whether it's for political reasons or they're just lazy or whatever. It has to do with the fact is that the radio business is on a tailspin since it was deregulated in 1996. The stock prices are way down. The ownership is down by 34% of owners. There's very little localism anymore, as you know. It's all syndicated talk. So there's a lot of problems with the radio industry.
Well,
so,
a tremendous amount of problems. And as you mentioned a few moments ago, the ownership cap probably did more to exacerbate this problem than anything else. I am sure of that.
There's no question that a case could be made, a very strong case could be made, that since the removal of the Fairness Doctrine in 1987, which I could spend a lot of time talking about, but I choose not to, but the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which ironically was signed by Bill Clinton, to his credit, he has identified that as the biggest mistake that he made during his presidency, was signing that deal. But he still did it, and that has probably led the way to more solidification of the right wing in talk radio than anything else, much more than the fairness doctrine.
I think you're absolutely right. We were getting a bunch of feedback in the background. I guess it's all gone now.
Okay.
Yeah. You're still there. Thought we lost
yep.
you for a minute. It got so nice and quiet all of a sudden. I don't know where all that feedback was coming from. Welcome to live radio, folks. It's happened throughout the country. Like Clear Channel, I'm not sure how many stations Clear Channel has now. They've gone around actually buying up very small stations. They bought up a very small station I used to work on just so they could pretty much close it down. They've done that all across the country so that they can concentrate their efforts, put 10, 11 stations in one building, cut their cost, and they have done so. You're right about radio being in a tailspin. It's also been in a tailspin for the employees. Look how many people have been put out of business by put out of jobs by Clear Channel.
By any way of quantifying this problem, if you looked at the radio business over the last 10 years, almost any barometer, whether it's revenue, ad revenue's down, let's look at talk radio. They always like to talk about the fact that talk radio is the number one format. 17% of all radio, talk radio is 17% of the audience listens to talk radio. What they failed to point out is that that also includes sports, and it also includes all the hot talk stations, you know, Tom Likas and so on, and and a lot of other categories. If you took the sports out of the equation, and sports has nothing to do with political talk, political talk has not grown at all in the last 10 years. It is totally flat. Now, what that means is that he got Sean Hannity. He wasn't even a talk radio host 10 years ago. He's on 500 stations. He gets pretty good ratings. Yet, even with Sean Hannity added to the mix, the category hasn't grown. And liberal talk, too. That's including liberal talk. So it's not a booming business right now. What is booming in radio is Spanish and sports and a few other things, but that's about it. Music and talk radio are flat as they come.
Oh, here locally where I live, they took a talk station recently, part of one of the conglomerates here, and called Meridian Broadcasting, took one of their stations, took talk off of it, and put Spanish music on. So you know where
there's
the money
is. Spanish is by far the hottest category. I believe in the last 10 years it's grown about 70%. So, I mean, you know, it's a growing market, which is ironic because it is the immigration bill which has stirred up the politicians against talk radio. They are so incensed, both, as I say, Republicans and Democrats, at the onslaught. And of course, you know, a lot of these people who listen to talk radio, they phone in death threats. They just get riled up.
Oh yeah.
And the politicians are pretty upset about it. Not to say I feel sorry for them. But,
no,
you know.
I don't either. They ate they ate the fruit. Now they're going to have to suffer the consequences. Well, Bruce, I want to thank you for being on the program again this week and filling us in on this.
And I heard you talking about the weather. Before I got on the air, it sounds like it's another perfect day down there in Clearwater. Huh?
Well, we're not in Clearwater. We're in Fort Myers, Naples
south
area.
South of Fort Myers.
Yeah, we're in South Florida. Those people in Clearwater are way up north.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
They're northerners to us down here.
But we're getting some beautiful weather here in California, too. So.
Well, it never rains in California, and I guess we know that by the... It hadn't rained much in Florida either. The fire,
yeah.
You guys have had your fires. We've had our fires...
But
there is no global warming. Just because there are droughts everywhere, and just because the temperatures are up and all that, doesn't mean there's any global warming, folks. Don't make that I'm saying that, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Bruce, your site?
www.talkingradio.blogspot.com.
Everybody got that? Okay.
And the one thing to look for is early in July, I do a quarterly lineup of roundup of liberal talk radio hosts and a ranking. Last quarter it was Randy Rhodes was number one, and she's actually been using it in her intro.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see who that is.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for being on the program. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Yes.
So long.
Bye, Guy.
Yeah, bye now. So there have it, the latest news in talk radio. That's right. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. And by the way, get your phones ready, 866-546-5254. We'll be right back.
He had time, had the world in his pocket. You never rock it, chilly, chilly, smooth. Never tip the ship. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. 20 years drinking beers, slapping back one vacation. One heart attack, honest work, honest pay, honest town. Just an American lad and his lassie. 20 years popping ribbons in a
Bob gets paid off. What you gonna do when you get home? Winter in America, chills to the bone. Winter in America, chills to the bone. You gotta believe the system works for you, but it's a power lunch, and you're the beast. Your wife's out looking for a slave, four kids sitting home alone. You tried to raise them right, but before you know, they'll be sucking on a crack pipe. Feeling weak, guns at your back, kids gone hungry, Bob's kids have a Big Mac. Okay, chilling, you know this won't last long. Word to the president, he says there's nothing wrong. In America, chills to the bone. The devil wants you on that phone. Birth to your fifth child, a hunger screams, drive you wild. Once 20 years in the Union Corps, congratulations, you're one of the four. Pray to the Lord for a friend, empty pockets tell you to fend for yourself. Put your self-respect on the shelf, yo, you get no help. Initiation to the welfare line, emasculation complete. Your beat, damn, broke down crying. Winter in America, chills to the bone. Winter in America, you're on your own.
How are you doing this afternoon? Glad to have all of you along with us here on the Guy James Show today. Kind of a lazy day. Immigration bill went down today, so all the homophobe and racists won't have to worry about that anymore for a while. It won't be brought back up for a long, long time, I'm sure. another defeat for George Bush. It's amazing to me. I'm sure I touched upon it yesterday. I don't remember. I think I did. I'm to that age where I don't remember what happened yesterday. But it's funny how they all coalesced around Bush. Everything he did. He did 99% of what all the righties wanted, what all the hardcore conservatives wanted. He was right there. He did their tax cut they wanted. He fed big business the way they wanted. K Street's got to be, oh, my God, happy with him. We know KBR and Halliburton are just as happy as can be, Bechtel and all those folks. And yet he comes up with something different on one issue, on this immigration bill, and all of a sudden they don't want anything to do with him anymore. And I did want to continue this on just a little bit, what Bruce was saying about this fairness doctrine thing. Yeah, fairness doctrine, smearness doctrine. The fairness doctrine doesn't mean a damn thing. It really doesn't. The real key to this, and I don't want anybody to get caught up in that argument about the fairness doctrine. And I see the congressmen are already. They're wanting to bring it up and start a big political fight on it and make it an issue. And they want to frame the issue on the right. That's what they're trying to do. They've already got a head start on it on right-wing talk radio. The Hannitys and all those people are talking about it every single day. I heard Laura Ingraham talking about it yesterday. The real solution for this whole problem is in the ownership caps. And if there's anything that in this country that needs to be busted up, you know, talk about trust, the old antitrust laws and so forth. If there's anybody that's got a chokehold on something, it's the media. It most certainly is the media. I don't remember the exact guidelines, but you used to be able to own one newspaper and maybe one radio station in a market. Now you can own it all. And these ownership caps have really, really tilted the balance on this, and so don't let this talk about the fairness doctrine take the spotlight off what's really important here. And what is important here is getting some of these ownership caps back. I don't know what the answer is. Clear Channel has got over 1,200 stations right now. No company should have 1,200 radio stations in this country. If the owner of that country wants to go on a long, prolonged political vendetta against somebody, he can do it. If he wants to elect somebody, he can probably do it. It's not right for somebody to have that much political influence with our airwaves. You want to go out and buy ads with your personal fortune, you do it. I don't care. But when you're running them over our airwaves with licenses we have granted to you, you should not have the control of 1,200 stations and what goes on 1,200 of those stations and be able to shut out any political discourse that you wish. We already know on TV and radio of certain ads not being run because somebody didn't want them to, claimed they were inappropriate simply because they didn't meet the ideological standards of the stations. So that's the dangerous thing. It's the ownership cap, and they need to get to work on it. I don't think a lot of people understand how this whole right-wing radio thing got started. And, you know, they like to say all the time that the righties do, well, the reason that right-wing radio is so prolific is because we speak for the people, because we have all the radio talent, because we say what the people want to hear. And the lefties don't. That's the story you hear every day on right-wing talk radio. It is BS. Plain old-fashioned, good old-fashioned American bullshit. That's what that argument is. They do not owe their success to great broadcasters. They do not owe their success. I mean, and I'm not saying that their broadcasters don't have any talent, because they do. But it's not like they have all the talent and no one else does. And it's not because they're ideologically perfect and no one else has any good ideas. It's not like, you know, they're serving like 75 million people. And what about the 70, 75 million people that aren't getting served, that aren't hearing what they would like to hear? Those are the folks that we need to talk about. This didn't start because someone said, oh, my God, Rush Limbaugh is this amazing talent. Not at all. And I've said this for years. Roger Ailes, the man who promoted Rush Limbaugh, is the guy that's responsible for it. And I don't think a lot of people understand how terrestrial talk radio works. You don't pay to have your shows on. They don't pay you to have your shows on. It's all done in a barter basis. For example, you go to a terrestrial radio station and say, here you go. Here's our show, free of charge. We'll send it to you free of charge every day. We'll pay the host. We'll pay the production costs. We'll pay all of that. All we want is 5 minutes per hour of your advertising time, and we'll sell it. Don't you worry about it. And so stations were paying people to run programs, run local programming, paying a guy to a host for the show, paying for production of it, paying for a director of it, a board op, when all they have to do is take this show free coming in that old Roger Ailes offers them free. All we got to do is give up 5 minutes of advertising. Well, of course they took the deal. And it worked out well. It worked out very well. And that's how they got a stranglehold on talk radio. People on the left were too slow in the draw to get the job done. Roger Ailes marketing right-wing radio is what really got started, got the whole thing rolling. It wasn't the talent of one Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or anybody like that. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
It's Dave, Guy.
Hi, Dave.
California. I think you're awfully close to it, but it was all part of a plan on the part of this PNAC, neocon, Carlyle group that had this desire to grab everything. And to that end, they needed to take away our free press, take away our honest elections, in effect take away our democracy, control the media, control the information that's getting to the people to keep them dumb, keep them in line. It was all a big plan. And so they bought up what they had to do in radio stations and in newspapers and limited our ability to any longer enjoy free speech in this country. And
well, it's like the grocery store shelves, you know. It's why Frito-Lay and Pepsi and Coke, a lot of people don't understand that, grocery companies are companies like PepsiCo and all that, they pay for those spots in the grocery store. And when they've got everything bought up, some little guy comes in with a superior product. He's got no place to put it because everything's been bought up, and that's exactly what you're talking about here.
Indeed. I share your utter disgust, your hatred for what these cons have done to this country and what they are doing to it continually. And if there was anything that I felt that I could do that would change it, I would do it. I demonstrate every week. I'm at the congressman's office every week. I'm in the Peace and Freedom. I'm in the Vets for Peace. I social action with the Unitarians, and we keep trying, but they have such an arrogance. They feel we own the voting machines, and so do all you want. Say what you want. Think what you want. Vote how you want. We'll count the votes for you.
Well, I think they're about to get their comeuppance, but the only thing is their comeuppance going to come in the form of Democrats who will go to the House and the Senate and do the things they ought to do? I do believe that there's going to be a tidal wave if things continue to go the way they are politically for the Republicans right now. There will be a tidal wave of change in the House and the Senate and the White House as well. But the only problem is, I wish I could sit here and tell you, oh, that's going to do average Joe lunch bucket a lot of good. I'm not sure it will. If the Democrats don't behave any differently than they have so far.
Well, it's been my fear for the longest time, and we've discussed it, that, in a small precinct, 200, 250 registered voters, those precincts, some of them delivered 6,000, 7,000 votes to George Bush. And people said, well, that's ridiculous. There's got to be a recount. Recount? What are you talking about, recount? There's nothing to be recounted. It's all electronic, and there's no paper. There's nothing to be recounted. And so I think, that it's consistently been the neocon way. No time does a voting machine accident happen in favor of a Democrat. So I Rush Holder's introducing a bill, and they say it's maybe only going to make things worse. And Ron Wyden, who I've been prevailing on, has been trying to put the Oregon plan in place all over the country, and that's where everybody receives a paper ballot, like an absentee, and returns it to the registrar or mails it back in. They will all be counted on demo machines, which will cheat again, but then there is, in the end, the paper that can be manually recounted, and that's, I think, that's the preferable one. But I'm scared to death of what's going to happen if we don't get some effective control over there. They design these machines to cheat, and that's just what they do.
Well, they absolutely have designed them that way. I see here in Florida we're going to go back to paper, but the only thing is the way they're doing it, that appeases some people to say, well, we're going to have paper. Yeah, you're going to have a receipt when you leave the polling place. What good's that going to do if they're, you know, a couple of thousand people in a precinct and, you know, the vote didn't look right? Are all those people going to gather back together again with their receipts and compare them? And, you know, there's still plenty of ways for them to turn the results around.
If they wanted to have a paper verification, there should be a lockbox there guarded and that they could put all the paper receipts in it and then see how the manual, the paper matches up with the machine.
Exactly. Someone there to guard the box. You put your receipt in it after verifying that it's correct. You put it in the box, and those babies get counted, too. If there's any discrepancy in the electronic voting, count those things. It's not that big of a deal. I do not understand. Well, I do understand why they don't do it, but I'd sure love to go back to it. It's the only way to guarantee that we'll have fair elections.
Do you have anybody there that's credible? I mean, an election commissioner or secretary of state? Anybody in Florida that would like to see an honest election?
It's a Republican machine. So even our new governor, Charlie Crist, it's a Republican machine. It's a Jeb Bush machine all over again. So
I know, and it's easier to cheat on it than it is the paperless D-bowl.
Yeah.
Because it can hand you a paper saying anything and then cast the vote the way it chooses.
Yep, that's right. That's right. But yet, you know, they're making much ado over this, saying, hey, we're going to give you a paper ballot. Well, that might be worth nothing more than some of that paper that comes on the rolls hanging in the bathroom, if you know what I mean.
Well, maybe we could get people to be in there and say, we have a box here that's going to be locked. Would you like to put your paper in it if we need a recount?
Yeah.
Get people to volunteer to do that.
Yeah, well, first we're going to have to get the election board to allow that. And I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go, Dave. I really don't.
So important.
Yeah, it is. Will we ever get our democracy back? Will we get it back and able to tune it up and fix it and put it back on the road again before it crashes and burns for good? That's the concern here. Dave, good
well,
to hear from
love
you.
Your efforts.
Thanks
I
a lot,
love
Dave.
Your efforts, Mike.
Good to hear from you. I was going to go to a break. I'm going to hang on for just a minute. Does it seem to you like that son of a bitch Dick Cheney is everywhere? Does it seem like that to you? I mean, and, you know, he's not. He's holed up wherever he's holed up, and he's caved someplace most of the time. But does it not seem to you that his fingerprints are on everything that happens in Washington, D.C.? You have to sit and wonder. You have to look at Dick Cheney in awe, and I do, that he has been able somehow to consolidate enough power, to get enough willing accomplices, to get enough yes men working for him, that he has his tentacles on everything that happens in Washington, D.C. Not a day goes by here lately that we don't find out that Cheney was in on this, Cheney was in on that. My God! That's been one of the good things about this four-part series that came out in the Washington Post. Yes, we all knew that Dick Cheney had an inordinate amount of power in this administration, more so than any vice president in history. We knew that. And we knew what a scoundrel this man is, but some of the minutiae that this man has gotten involved in, I am fascinated by these stories that are coming out over Dick Cheney, because how the hell are there enough hours in the day for one man to oversee literally every branch of what's going on in the government, to literally micromanage the United States government? And that is what Dick Cheney has been doing. And to give you just one more example of it, I see now that Christine Todd Whitman, you know, she's the new media darling of the talk shows. She's the former governor of New Jersey and the head of Junior Bush's EPA. She quit. And she quit some time ago, and you heard the story of why she quit. She quit for that old phrase that everybody in the Bush administration, the reason they do quit, to spend more time with their family. And it wasn't true. And now the Washington Post comes out with an article today, and the paper alleges that Whitman left the administration because they pressured her to accept pro-industry coal power plant rules, which threatened ghoulish levels of air pollution, after industry officials complained to Vice President Cheney about Clinton-era rules requiring the plants to update their technology when they conducted routine maintenance. Didn't make them shut them down to do it. Hey, guys, when you're going to do your maintenance, make sure to add the new technology on. It wasn't that big of a deal, but they didn't want to spend the money to do it. They didn't want to take the profits off their bottom line, so they couldn't give their precious dividends to their fat cat owners. All they had to do was add the new technology when they conducted their routine maintenance to comply with the air quality standards. And Cheney gets involved. And guess whose side he was on? Oh, not Christine Todd Whitman in the EPA. Cheney was not involved on the side of keeping our air clean. Oh, no. He's on the side of the big coal companies. Whitman told the Post that she'd been, quote, stunned by what she viewed as an unquestioned belief that EPA's regulations were primarily to blame for keeping companies from building new power plants. Oh, where have we heard that before? The government regulations are keeping us, we oil companies, from building new refineries. We can't build new refineries unless we get permission from the government. Oh, gee whiz. Therefore, we don't have enough refining capacity. Therefore, we've got to charge you poor folks some more for your gasoline. And we're really sorry, but it's all the government's fault. Bull! It's not true. And here we had the same thing going on. And Whitman's saying that she had to fight tooth and nail to keep Cheney from turning over the rewriting of the rules to the Energy Department. She wanted to return to Bush's so-called Clear Skies Initiative, but that went nowhere. And so, after the EPA rewrote the coal power plant standards, the White House essentially rewrote the rules to favor the coal industry, and Whitman said she'd had enough. She said, I couldn't sign it. She said the president had a right to have an administrator who could defend this. I couldn't. Now, shortly after that, the Federal Appeals Court found that the rule change violated the Clean Air Act. And according to the paper, the judges that ruled that way said the administration had redefined the law in a way that could be valid, quote, only in a Humpty Dumpty world. Of course, these people that made this ruling are federal judges, which this administration has nothing but contempt for. It excoriates them constantly. Only the judges they appoint to the Supreme Court have any credence whatsoever with these people. But here we go. Dick Cheney once again has his fingers in the pie. Dick Cheney, Dick Cheney, Dick Cheney. It's incredible what this man has done. I give him credit. We'll be back.
When the levees, they are leaking, and the storm has hit you hard, Help is on the way, my friend. They send you a credit card. You can live in a posh hotel room with Granny and Cousin Bud till you reach your credit limit. Then you're back in the rain and mud. Give me a little more plastic if you please. It's the fix for every failure, disaster, or disease. From the Rust Belt to the Dust Bowl to the hole in my own backyard. Give me a little more plastic, I can live like a movie star. In Thailand and Sumatra, on the shores of Tsunami Land, the boys from Chase Manhattan have come to lend a hand. Even if you have no income, that is really quite okay. Get some plastic, dude, you are pre-approved. That's the American way. Give me a little more plastic if you please. It's the fix for every failure, disaster, or disease. From the Rust Belt to the Dust Bowl to the hole in my own backyard. Give me a little more plastic, I can live like a movie star. I once had a health and pension plan and a union that was fine. But all those frills and entitlements are bad for the bottom line. When they privatize the public schools and Social Security, this little piece of plastic should be good enough for me. I used to owe my soul to the company store. Now my soul goes to the banker for the things I can't afford. Now the private profit system has reached its highest stage, where we put our lives on plastic and work for a Walmart wage. We vote for the plastic candidates and we eat the plastic food. And there's even a plastic bullet to correct my attitude. Give me a little more plastic if you please. It's the fix for every failure, disaster, or disease. From the Rust Belt to the Dust Bowl to the hole in my own backyard. Give me a little more plastic, I can live like a movie star.
In Iraq, my administration looked at the intelligence and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny!
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Yes, you better call. You don't have a whole lot of time. You got enough time to get another call in, though. We really do. 866-546-5254. You know, I found an article today that pleased me to no end. I have been totally unabashed on this program about my hope that Al Gore will throw his hat into the ring and take his rightful place and win his rightful place to sit in the Oval Office of the United States. And I know maybe some of you don't agree with me, but I have a right to my opinion. You have a right to yours. I think the world and all of Al Gore. I think the man was cheated out of the presidency. I think if there is such a thing as karma, he should sit in the Oval Office. I think Al Gore would be a great president. I think Al Gore learned a lot from the last race. I think Al Gore learned that you don't allow the Bushes to run roughshod over you, which he did in that last election. And, of course, I think another thing he learned was that you don't pick a guy like Joe Lieberman, for God's sake, as your running mate. Man, whoever advised him to do that. Whew. I remember the day I heard that, and I thought, oh, my God, no, not Joe Lieberman, not Joe Lieberman. Why would you do that? You know, Al made a lot of mistakes. He shunned Bill Clinton during that administration, or during that race. He could have used Bill Clinton's help. Bill Clinton was popular then, still is the most popular man in the world. And now Bill's pulling for somebody else to become president. But you better believe if Al Gore got the nomination, Bill Clinton would be in there pitching for him. Going to have a hard time getting the nomination. But getting back to what I was talking to before I took the trip, as we used to say, around Robin Hood's barn here, getting to my point. This out of the Washington Times today. Former Vice President Al Gore is New York Senator Hillary Clinton, Rodham Clinton's worst nightmare in the nation's first primary. A news poll shows if Mr. Gore got into the new 2008 presidential nomination contest, he would edge out Mrs. Clinton in New Hampshire 32% to 26%. And defeat the rest of the Democratic defenders, says 7 News Suffolk University poll of likely voters. Gore is the only Democrat, including Hillary, who can instantly melt the field, said David Palagios, director of the Suffolk University Political Research Center, which conducted the survey. Absent a Gore entry, Mrs. Clinton is the clear front-runner among declared Democratic candidates, with 37%, up from 28% in the same poll taken in March. She's widened her lead over Barack Obama considerably. Barack is second with 19%, followed by John Edwards and Bill Richardson at 9% each. They went on to say the Democratic candidate debate a few weeks ago may have helped Hillary and hurt Barack Obama. But Gore takes the most votes from Obama. I think a chunk of Obama voters in New Hampshire are anybody but Hillary Democrats. Now, keep this in mind. According to this poll in New Hampshire, Al Gore leads Hillary Clinton 32 to 26%. He has not made a speech there. He has not made his presence known there. He has not spent a penny. He has no machine working in New Hampshire. He has done nothing. And he's the leading candidate in this poll for the nomination in the state of New Hampshire. I think this is a significant development. I think this is something that Al Gore has to sit up and take a close look at. I also have heard today, as many of you have as well, I'm sure, a rumor, I haven't been able to confirm it, try as I might today, that Al Gore has canceled a whole bunch of speaking appearances that he had scheduled for the next few months. Why would he do that? He would do that if he was planning on spending his time doing something else, namely running for the presidency of the United States, running for the Democratic nomination to be president of the United States. And let's face it, whoever gets that nomination will be the next president of the United States. And in my humble opinion, that person should be Al Gore. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. I do believe, without question, Al Gore could raise a phenomenal amount of money. Hillary's proved that she can raise a phenomenal amount of money. But do keep in mind that all these people have raised a lot of money with Al Gore not being in the race. I think when he comes in, he takes a lot of the air out of the room for some of these people. I don't think there's any question about it. I think Al Gore may well end up with a Nobel Prize. If he does, that'll move him along. He's got the possible selection of a number of fabulous vice presidential candidates. I'm sure that if he should step in, if he should get the nomination, I'm sure that Hillary Clinton And Barack Obama would not take the vice presidential nod, but you've got people in there like Dennis Kucinich. You've got people in there like Bill Richardson. You've got John Edwards. We've got some excellent, excellent people that could be vice president that are oh so qualified and would meet with the approval of the American people. I'm sure of that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. Will Al take note of that? Has, in fact, Al Gore canceled a bunch of speaking engagement? If he has he done it so that he can seek the nomination? God, I hope so. I feel so bad for that man, and he's achieved fame and fortune and been doing his life's work in these past few years since that election. To his credit, he went on and has done tremendous things for humanity. Tremendous things. He's worked tirelessly in it for the environment. Lots of guys would have folded up their tent and gone away, but Al Gore didn't. He's worked for the people. Not only this country, but for the people around the world. I'm very proud of him for that. I have great respect for him, and I happen to think he'd make a great president of the United States. Run, Al. Run. Do it for us. Well, we've come to the end of another day. We'll be back again on Tuesday with another live program. Lots to talk about always. Keep that in mind, what I said about Al Gore. Don't be surprised if Al makes the jump here. I don't think he'll make an official announcement. You better believe, though, they're taking a hard look at it. You just know they are. I hope so. If nothing else, even if you're not an Al Gore person, you have to admit and make this race a whole lot more interesting. Hey, you've been listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We don't do things halfway here. We go all the way. Because you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.